Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, the program that's devoted for the largest segment of society. To those of you who are open to the realization or have come to recognize that all of the world's religious, political, economic, military, and media institutions are corrupt. Most are counterproductive. I'm Yada. Our number, if you'd like to join us anytime over the next 2 hours, is toll-free. It's 877-300-7645. U.S. authorities have charged a former member of the United Nations General Assembly, a billionaire, a real estate developer, and four others, for engaging in a wide-ranging corruption scheme. You know, the fact of the matter is that the larger the institution, the more likely it is corrupt. You know, you look at the Roman Catholic Church with a membership of 1.5 billion. And it is not just financially corrupt, engaged in all manner of money laundering and bribes. It is also morally corrupt and engaged in not only pedophilia, but worse, the cover-up of pedophilic crimes. And then you look at the United States, the government. You know, one of the reasons that health care is out of control in terms of cost is because the government is now some 55% of health care is paid by the government. And so the government is an institution rife with amoral individuals who are more than likely susceptible to bribes. And so a huge percentage, and it's probably up there in the 40 percentile, of the costs associated with Medicare and Medicaid are corruption, are for services that were not provided or services that are grossly overbilled. Fraud is the term. And beyond that, of course, then you get the enormous waste. You know, when the U.S. military, another large institution, and working with the CIA, decided that under Bush's orders, to comply with Bush's orders, and to send over a dozen C-130s loaded from tip to tail with $100 bills, billions upon billions, tens of billions of dollars in cash to Afghanistan. The reason they sent the cash to Afghanistan is because they knew that the government that they would deploy instead of the Taliban would have to be bribed, and that it would be easier to bribe people than it would be to negotiate an honest deal. And today, the government that is considered the single most financially corrupt in the world is the puppet government America established in Afghanistan. It's par for the course. When you create a large human institution, that institution is primed to be corrupt, morally corrupt, financially corrupt. And so John Ash, a former UN ambassador from Antigua and Barbuda, who was a General Assembly president from 2013 to 2014, was accused in a complaint filed in federal court in New York City of taking more than $1.3 million in bribes from Chinese businessmen, including the developer NG Lap Singh. Manhattan U.S. Attorney Bahara, who announced the arrest of Ash and other defendants, said the investigation could result in more charges as authorities examine whether corruption is business as usual at the United Nations. And the answer, of course, is yes. Corruption is business as usual. And it's not just in financial bribes. It's in just blatant dishonesty. A great example is that when the United Nations said they were going to establish a peacekeeping force in Lebanon so that to force Israel out of Lebanon, because Israel had gone into Lebanon because Hezbollah, Allah's party, was launching rocket and terrorist jihadist attacks against northern Israel from Lebanon. And so Israel finally just had enough of it and said, you know, we're not going to subject our people to this kind of terrorism. And they went into Lebanon to confiscate the weapons and to disrupt the base operations of Hezbollah in Lebanon. So then, you know, the United Nations has a conniption fit. They don't ever, hold Hezbollah, or in the case of Gaza, Hamas, or in the case of the West Bank, the PLO, of being terrorists and of promoting terror. I'm being responsible for the incursion, but instead they blame Israel and said that, you know, Israel has to go. And then they claim that they're going to maintain the truce by prohibiting the formation of militant bases by Hezbollah and keeping them disarmed. And of course, then the United Nations works as a conduit for weapons, and they serve as a means of protecting the jihadists. So it's corrupt. It's the nature of all human institutions. That's why Yahweh said in the first request of Abram, before Abram even came to know who Yahweh was, before he could approach the promised land, before he could engage in the covenant as a prerequisite for even having a discussion with God, walk away from your country. Disassociate yourself from society's traditions. Disassociate from your father's family. If you want to be part of my family, I'm not going to tolerate any allegiance to a human institution, whether it be political or patriotic or religious. Nothing is acceptable in my presence that is institutionalized, because Yahweh recognizes that human institutions are all corrupt. This is another example of the United Nations, that corruption is business as usual, not only at the United Nations, but in all large human institutions. You look at the pastors of the mega churches; they are almost universally the most corrupt. It is just the nature of things. This article continues, if proven, today's charges will confirm that the cancer of corruption plagues far too many, not only state and local governments, but also all government interactions associated with the United Nations. It's rampant. And part of the problem here is also political correctness, that moral code that indoctrinates children how to behave, that tells those who are in college all the way really through graduate school that you comply with political correctness, where there is no moral judgment, where there is no right or wrong, where there is no ability to discern between good and bad, moral and immoral. And because of that, the vast preponderance of people are amoral at best. Many are immoral. Many are naturally prone to cheat, to lie, to deceive, to steal. You know, it's gotten to the point now where a communist, an avowed socialist, can run for president in a major party and poll extremely well, to have the majority of people believe that this person is going to be a net asset to the country. And it's because most people are no longer accountable. They think that those who are productive are cheating them if they don't give what they earn to them, and that they're being cheated if they don't get what they did not earn. It's a completely bankrupt and immoral perspective, but it is prevalent in America. It's prevalent in Europe. And if you go to the world of Islam, they blame everybody but themselves for their own horrible circumstances. This is an interesting article, falling on the heels of this revelation of world institutionalized corruption. It says the 500 largest American companies hold $2.1 trillion in accumulated profits offshore to avoid U.S. taxes, and would collectively owe an estimated of $620 billion in U.S. taxes if they repatriated the funds, according to the study released on Tuesday. Now, this study, like everything else that's done in America these days was done completely out of context. There was absolutely no discussion in this as to where these profits were earned. If they were earned outside the United States, why should the company pay tax in the United States on profits it earned on business it conducted outside of the United States? It also didn't disclose how much these companies paid in taxes, even though the amount that was not brought into the United States was disclosed on the same federal filings as the amount that they actually paid in taxes. So there is no point of reference to know how de minimis this amount is compared to the amount that was paid in taxes, nor was there any reference as to how many years, over how many years, the $2.1 trillion in accumulated profits was collected. You know, if, for example, if it's over 20 years, then it's a very small amount per year. And if it's over 20 years, then you have to compare the taxes, this estimated $620 billion, divide that by 20 years, and then compare that to the average annual tax payments of those companies to know if this in context is significant or insignificant. And even then, you have to ask the question, why would a company who has paid taxes on the business operations in foreign countries also be expected to pay taxes again in the United States? And why bring money into the United States when there's a new tax to take money out of the United States? Moreover, because the United States can no longer be trusted, businesses know that they have to keep money in international accounts to keep their accounts from being frozen in the United States. But when you present information out of context, when the audience that you're presenting the information to is economically ignorant, you can score points, and that was the purpose of this. It was to feed the myths that Bernie Sanders is running his campaign on, that the 1%, that those big corporations and the 1%ers are cheating you out of monies that they should be paying to support the lifestyle that you so richly deserve, oh immoral voter. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Yeah, this study was done by the Citizens for Tax Justice and the U.S. Public Interest Research Group Education Fund. It's a pseudonym here for liberal politicians. The journalist covering the study said done by two left-leaning, they would be socialist by their own profession, and probably communist in reality groups, found that nearly three-quarters of the firms on the Fortune 500 list of biggest American companies by gross revenue operate tax haven subsidies in countries like Bermuda, Ireland, Luxembourg, and the Netherlands. There's several reasons. And by the way, this isn't a bad thing. First is that they earn profits around the world. They are a Fortune 500 company because they don't just do business in the United States. And so when they do business in Ireland, their operations in Ireland pay Irish taxes. And countries have learned that if you lower corporate taxes, your economy grows. If you lower corporate taxes, more people are employed in the private sector. If you lower corporate taxes, you take in more tax revenue because those corporations not only make more money in your country, they employ more people whom you can tax. They buy more goods, which you tax. And so there's a realization everywhere except the economically ignorant United States that businesses ought to be taxed at a very de minimis level. But the fact is that in Ireland, for example, and the Netherlands, the tax rate is about 6% on corporations. It's 35% in the United States. So you have a disincentive to be productive in the United States and every incentive to be productive elsewhere. Now, if people out of context say that, no, it doesn't matter where they earn their money, they need to pay tax there and here too, and they should be happy to forfeit 35% of their revenue, our profits and taxes, plus have all of the other burdens. You know, the 7.5% federal excise tax that supports Social Security, the pyramid scheme, the Ponzi scheme, to be required to provide health insurance, which is extraordinarily expensive, another burden legislated upon business, to be the federal government's means to collect tax at extraordinary expense to the business, and all of the other fees and property tax and other taxes, licenses paid by the corporation, all you're going to do is continue to drive business away from America, where people will make things, where they will do business elsewhere, and ultimately they'll move their headquarters out of the United States. So that is what you're going to do if you continue to strangle the only goose laying golden eggs. Government is a parasite. It is not a source of value. It is not a source of income. It is a net parasite. Just are now as 50% of Americans pay no tax, contribute nothing to the federal government, and yet receive enormous benefits from the government. They are net parasites. This subsidy, or this study, which isn't a study, because all they did is look at the tax filings of the Fortune 500 companies, and then they took this information out of the context of the whole. If it had been a report that put it in context and discussed what are the reasons why companies are better off keeping a sizable nest egg of capital than they would be if they gave money to the government instead. And the answer is that when government-instituted recessions take hold, as did the housing recession that was government-instituted, they have a buffer. They can stay in business while everything else around them spirals down. Second, they want to buy additional equipment to make their business more efficient. They have the funds to do it. That's the reason that they do it. That's the reason why businesses prefer to have a positive balance sheet rather than government, which is run by economic morons, that has a negative balance sheet. That the government, rather than having net assets, has net liabilities now on the balance sheet of $17 trillion plus an additional $70 trillion in unfunded mandates. Yes, in this particular, we'll put in air quotes, study, it's a 358 companies, and nearly 72% of the Fortune 500 operate what they call subsidiaries in tax haven jurisdictions. They operate subsidiaries. Yes, that's why they're Fortune 500 companies. They operate subsidiaries. Those subsidiaries do business in other countries. There's no way to be a Fortune 500 company and only do business in the United States. So they do business in other countries, they pay taxes in other countries, and they pay attention to where the tax rates on businesses are the lowest, and they, because they're rational people, they choose to do business in places where the tax rates are the lowest. I know that liberals aren't rational, but that's what drives business. If you're not rational, you can't be successful in business. So this idea that they should stop doing business in countries that have lower tax rates is asinine. You know, if you want them to pay more tax here in America, and you want them to employ more people here in America, if you want them to build the American economy, diminish the taxes, stop penalizing them with a 35% tax rate. Take your corporate tax rate down to under 10%. And your economy will flourish. Businesses will thrive. They will do more and more business and employ more and more people in your country if you punish them less for their success. So this study says that their filings indicated that they were paying about 6% in taxes overseas compared to a 35% U.S. corporate tax rate.
Duh-duh.
I mean, come on, folks. Smell the coffee. Yes, they will do business in countries, in places that tax them less. You know, if you're given a choice between pulling two carts, and one cart has 1,000 pounds of bricks in it, and the other cart has 10 pounds of apples in it, which one are you going to pull? Right. There's a reason, for example, that Toyota of North America, which employed 10,000 people in Southern California, in Long Beach, moved their headquarters out of Southern California to Texas. California has either the highest or second highest state income tax, 11% plus a surcharge of 2%, so 13%. You know what the state income tax is in Texas? 0%. So what did they do? They moved from a place that penalized their employees, that penalized them aggressively at 13%, to a place that didn't penalize their employees and didn't penalize them. It's the rational thing to do. And because they were rational, they have funds, that a net asset. They have more cash than they have liabilities, unlike the U.S. government that is completely and utterly ignorant economically, as are most Americans. It's the reason why Bernie Sanders is growing in popularity. Most Americans are economically ignorant. The conclusion of this study said that Congress can and should take strong action to prevent corporations from using offshore tax havens, which in turn would restore basic fairness into the tax system, reduce the deficit, improve the functioning of markets. The study concluded. No. If you were to restrict them doing business overseas, then they would simply divest themselves of their American operations and move overseas. That's what it would do. It wouldn't improve fairness or restore basic fairness. The problem is that the tax system isn't fair. Businesses in America are grossly overtaxed. If you want it to be fair, then lower the American tax rate. Then you would restore fairness. And you're not going to reduce the deficit, because when you create a disincentive for companies, for individuals, you're going to get a larger share of a much smaller pie. And lastly, it's not going to improve the functioning of markets, because it's going to drive business out of America. You know, businessmen are rational. Politicians are not. And because successful businessmen are rational, they're going to do what is in the best interest of their shareholders. And that means that they're going to turn away from countries that are penalizing them, that cannot be trusted. Turning now to Afghanistan, the U.S. military's highest-ranking general in Afghanistan acknowledged two things. One is that deadly attack that not only killed a score of civilians in the hospital in the Afghani city, but also killed a number of Doctors Without Borders that were serving there. They say first that it was just our excuse was it was collateral damage. They didn't intend to hit the hospital. And then they changed their tune and said, no, the Afghanis ordered the airstrike. This is a real mess. Now you're going to have a worldwide investigation of who's in charge, Who made the decision? Why couldn't better judgment be exercised? Why was America called in to bomb? Why were American troops sent in to intervene? Why did the Afghanis turn tail and run and leave their weapons and leave their vehicles for the Taliban to conquer? Why did the Afghan government said they'd recaptured the city when they had not? Why did the residents of the city come out to take selfies with and to congratulate the Taliban when they arrived? Why is it that the Americans aren't willing to acknowledge the fact that the army that it has equipped in Afghanistan is using their power and influence to rape and sodomize little boys, and that they're doing it in a huge way? That we have empowered and authorized the most grotesquely immoral regime, perhaps in human history, particularly as it relates to the sodomizing of children on a wide scale, all with American support, acknowledgement, and then to add insult to injury, we not only bomb a hospital and kill those who were already wounded inside, but we then can't keep our story straight as to why we did so. Now, in addition to all of that, having made a bad situation worse in Afghanistan, and by that I mean that in Afghanistan prior to our intervention, there were almost no acts of terrorism. After our intervention, terrorism is rife in Afghanistan. Prior to our intervention, there were very few refugees from Afghanistan. Now there are 4 million. So this is one of many examples where we made a bad situation worse. We claim that we have created a positive environment for little girls, where they can now go to school. But they get acid thrown in their faces, and they are routinely tortured and killed after having been raped. We made a bad situation worse in Afghanistan. Now, Army General John Campbell, who claims that he was completely ignorant of the fact that the U.S. military is aiding and abetting pedophiles, is concerned that the Islamic State is growing, and that they're recruiting members away from the Tehrik-e-Taliban of Pakistan, a branch of the Taliban, and that operationally they are emergent, and that they are poised to take over the eastern part of the country. Now, do you think that the Islamic State would have existed in Pakistan, in Afghanistan, in Libya, in Nigeria, in Yemen, all of which now have terrorist acts perpetrated by the Islamic State? Had the United States not invaded Iraq? That our invasion of Iraq and our military creating the awakening program as part of the surge created the Islamic State. And now, by continuing to focus on them, to play into their hands, to declare them as the enemy, to bomb them, we have spread them like a cancer around the globe. So many situations where America's intervention has made a bad thing worse. Turning closer to home, I read yesterday that a 5,000-pound Ten Commandments monument on the Oklahoma Capitol grounds was removed by workers in the middle of the night. And as I saw pictures of this occurring, you could actually read this monolith of stone. And first of all, it was in the big letters across the top, the Ten Commandments. Yahweh doesn't have one commandment, much less ten. The idea that there are Ten Commandments is a complete and utter myth. And it's so strange that Christians would want this and then protest it when it's removed. First of all, there are no Ten Commandments. There are ten statements. Yahweh uses the word dabar, which is the Hebrew word for word, communication, or statement, in association with it. But dabarim, words, ten statements, is also the name of the fifth book of the Torah. Dabarim, which has been corrupted to Deuteronomy, dabarim is words in Hebrew, statements. So how is it that the Torah, from which these statements are derived, could be annulled and no longer valuable, incapable of saving, according to the founder of Christianity, Paul, and yet these statements at the core of it are true? Are you being a bit hypocritical, dear Christian? So every aspect of this thing is wrong. There are no Ten Commandments. And it's just utter nonsense that so many people for so long have been played for fools regarding Ten Commandments. God doesn't have a single commandment. God doesn't command. You can't have free will and have a commandment. There are no commandments. There is a Hebrew mood that can convey a command. And amongst the ten statements, that mood is only used one time. And the mood is used on and is applied to a verb in a context where you have to know that it isn't a command, because you cannot command respect. You cannot command an attitude. You can command a response, so long as there's no free will, like in the military where you give an order, but you cannot command someone to respect, to value their mother and father. And in this particular case, it's our Heavenly Father and Spiritual Mother. And that's the only one of the ten statements that has a verb that is written in a mood that could convey a command. However, this particular mood, nine times out of ten when it's used, is designed to convey volition. It means it would be in your interest. You should want to. It would be a good idea if you were to desire valuing, respecting, viewing as significant your Heavenly Father and Spiritual Mother. But all of the rest are not conveyed in a mood that can convey express a command. And they're not called commandments by Yahweh. They are called the Ten Statements. And then, to make matters worse, the first statement is designed for really three reasons. The first statement is an introduction. I am Yahweh, your God. And on this piece of 5,000 pounds of stone, they created this horrible corruption, which it says, I am the Lord your God. Throughout the Torah, prophets, and Psalm, Yahweh tells us that the Lord is Satan. So if the Lord is your God, Satan is your God. It's Satan that commands. It's Satan that wants to control. It's Satan that wants to possess. Satan that's opposed to free will. It's Satan who loves religion. All the things that Yahweh wants you to walk away from. And so it is, I am Yahweh, your God. But no, they didn't write it that way. Did they, the people who chiseled in stone, know that it says, I am Yahweh, your God? Of course. But they wouldn't write God's name. God says that the removal of his name is the single greatest crime ever perpetrated by humanity. As a matter of fact, the third statement, which they wrote as, thou shalt not take the name of thy Lord, thy God, in vain, actually says, you should not accept, promote, or lift up, even tolerate, the debasement of, the negation of, the name of Yahweh, your God. And so in their bastardization of the instruction, they actually did the very thing that Yahweh said, don't do. And it's the only unforgivable sin listed in the Torah. He says, if you do that, I'm not going to forgive you. So the very institution that authorized this corruption of these 10 statements did by removing Yahweh's name, belittling his name, and replacing it with the Lord, the name entitled the Lord. They did the very thing that is unforgivable. So trying to do a service for their God, they actually angered the one and only God. And rather than earning points towards salvation, which was their desire, they assured that they could not be forgiven. That's how lost we are as a society, particularly those who are religious. They actually are counterproductive. Rather than pleasing their God by the placement of this monument there, they displeased him. They corrupted his testimony. They replaced his name. They undermined his very purpose, which is to give us free will so that we can choose whether or not we want to listen to him, that we want to follow his guidance. And instead, they replace it with a Lord that wants to compel, that wants to command, where there is no free will, the nature of human institutions.